WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
How did Helen Keller almost destroy her saintly reputation? According to a new biography by Dorothy Herman, the answer is by publicly advocating birth control, women's rights, and socialism, and at the end of her life by indulging in martinis and mink coats. Book critic Maureen Corrigan says that Herman's nuanced portrait of Helen Keller is no joke.
In the preface to her rich and compelling biography of Helen Keller, Dorothy Herman says that over the past few years, she's been subjected to a lot of those dumb Helen Keller jokes. I also heard those jokes recently whenever I'd mention whose biography I was reading. But I also heard something else. At least five women said to me, "Oh, Helen Keller, I read everything about her when I was a kid." I wonder about this obsession with Helen Keller that so many girls, myself included, seem to have experienced. Certainly Helen was a safe female for us to have admired. She was smart and indomitable, but her blindness and deafness rendered her dependent, thus ensuring that her strengths didn't overwhelm her femininity. After finishing Herman's biography, I also suspect that Annie Sullivan had a lot to do with our fascination with Helen's story. A story that goes like this. Once upon a time, there was a beautiful child lost in emptiness. Then one day, a young woman, also beautiful, comes along and rescues her. She takes the place of the child's ineffectual mother. Forever after, she barely leaves her side. As Herman vividly chronicles, Helen's singular relationship with Annie Sullivan sounds like a fantasy about the perfect mother, as well as a chaste fairy tale romance. At times, however, their relationship also felt like a dungeon to the two women, one they each sporadically tried to escape. There are also a couple of princes bearing threatening, slobbering kisses in Herman's unexpurgated life of Helen Keller, but they didn't stick around long enough to loosen the tormented love knot that bound Helen and Annie. Sex and politics are the two biggest bombshells Herman drops in this biography. Helen once told her friend Alexander Graham Bell that she couldn't imagine a man wanting to marry her. She said, "I should think it would seem like marrying a statue." Nevertheless, in 1914, when she was 36, Helen and her 29-year-old male secretary, Peter Fagan, fell in love. The romance was a secret one. Helen knew that her mother, and especially Annie Sullivan, who, as Herman points out, derived her identity and livelihood from their association, would never have approved. So Helen and Fagan planned to elope, going so far as to apply for a marriage license in Boston. Their scheme was eventually exposed, and Fagan disappeared. But Herman speculates that, given the socialist, free love circles the pair moved in, their affair was consummated. Helen Keller, a socialist? A wobbly who hailed the birth of the Soviet Union and palled around with the likes of John Reed and Emma Goldman? Those grammar school hagiographies that we girls lapped up tactfully omitted mention of Helen's radical leanings. It was Annie's husband, John Macy, another male who eventually realized he was the third wheel in a relationship built for two, who introduced Helen to socialism. Whenever she expressed her beliefs, however, the public scoffed. How could a deaf-blind woman know anything about politics? Instead, Helen's audience only wanted uplifting accounts of her courageous life. I've shortchanged Annie Sullivan here, but fortunately, Herman doesn't. Like many others who've studied Helen and her teacher, Herman believes that Annie was the truly brilliant partner in the relationship, especially given that she fought her way out of her own version of the darkness that imprisoned Helen. Herman graphically describes Annie's childhood spent in a poorhouse, where she shared quarters with sexually abusive adults as well as corpses. Ironically, her escape was bought at the price of her personal freedom. Annie suffered daily from headaches and nausea after hours and hours of spelling the world into Helen's demanding hand. Annie once admitted that she and the adult Helen had such fundamentally different conceptions of life that they would have loathed each other had they met under ordinary circumstances. Nonetheless, the image Herman leaves readers with is of Annie and Helen side by side, their ashes interned together at Washington's National Cathedral, like so many other couples, bound for eternity by love and circumstance and chafing mutual dependency.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Helen Keller, A Life.